As the American saying goes, another one bites the dust. This time, the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson via Twitter. U.S. President Donald Trump decided it was time to end this relationship. Tillerson joining the slew of other people who have resigned or have been fired. But this comes at a very critical juncture, right before talks with North Korea and before the U.S. makes a decision on the Iran nuclear deal. In this edition of the debate, we'll look at this firing and the man who has replaced Tillerson. First, Colin Campbell, our correspondent, joins us from Washington, D.C. Colin, at this point, Rex Tillerson has spoken, and I'm assuming the conference with the State Department in terms of the briefing being given to reporters is ongoing. What is exactly the reaction there in Washington on this firing and, of course, all the different details associated with this news?
Yeah, just moments ago, the Secretary of State addressed the nation and addressed reporters. He did leave the conference without answering any questions. Of course, just he wanted to reach out to the public. He wanted to set the record straight. And if you listen to his speech, you can almost notice what he didn't say, and that was how much he enjoyed really working for the president to any great degree. Of course, he said he enjoyed his job and that he wanted to serve the public. But if you were waiting for any platitudes or any blandishments about him serving the president, well, those definitely were not in his speech. What was in his speech was his record on defending his actions within the State Department, his style of diplomacy, and of course, the U.S. dealing with Russia. He talked about Russia's actions being in the interests of the public and looking at the ramifications of all of their actions, which really flies in stark contrast to how the president has dealt with various Russian controversies that the White House seems to brush off. Well, Tillerson really wanted to tackle these head on, and just within recent days, he talked about some suspicious behavior that he believed was coming out of Russia and something that needed to be addressed, something again that the White House seemed to dismiss, the president saying he would wait until further details to find out what happened to an ex-spy coming from Russia. Now, as we know, there has been some long-standing feud between the president and the Secretary of State. They had a working relationship, but there was definitely some discord between the two when the Secretary of State was reported to have called the president a moron. And so many people believe that the president never quite got over that, and that he also wanted somebody in the post of the Secretary of State position as to someone who agrees with him more. So again, these are just some the recent changes coming out of Washington, and which has been a long slew of shakeups.
Very well, thank you for that. We appreciate it. Let's bring some analysis into this debate. Wilmer Leon is a political scientist joining us from Washington, D.C. And also we have political commentator Scott Bennett, who joins us from San Francisco. Welcome, gentlemen. Scott Bennett, I think the obvious question here is your reaction here. I mean, this firing, the timing of it, it's very important amongst, of course, whatever reactions you may have on what has occurred.
Well, in one regard, it's sort of refreshing, but it's also disturbing because Rex Tillerson had a lot of potential to do a lot of good, and he really didn't do a lot of good. I consider the Trump foreign policy a complete disaster with regards to the arrogant posture of threatening to tear up the JCPOA, to Nikki Haley and her out-of-control maniacy at the United Nations, lambasting Russia for all sorts of nonsense and propaganda. And Russia recognizes that, and the Syrian Tomahawk missile attack, which occurred last year in regards to the chemical weapons that were never executed by Syria or Russia. So Rex Tillerson really didn't have a lot of strength. He certainly didn't have any charisma. He was sort of like a half inebriated dog. He sort of lumped around in a southern drawling accent. And I didn't see anything that was really of masculine affirmation, a bold leadership type. Now, he did call Trump a moron, and I think that was accurate in regards to Trump's attitude towards foreign policy, because he seems to be constantly treating the world like an inferior and like a teacher talking to a schoolboy, and that's not what the world wants. That's not what the president of the United States is, and that certainly is not what the United States is. The people of America recognizes that, and they put Trump in to do an opposite foreign policy, the one he's implementing. So Rex Tillerson's removal is refreshing, but what is not is putting Mike Pompeo into that position, because Mike Pompeo is one of the worst war criminals that should be prosecuted as well. And the first dealing with Pompeo out of the lips of any dignitary in Russia or Iran or anywhere else needs to be, Mike Pompeo, when you were a representative on Capitol Hill, you knew all about terrorist financing from the State Department, Hillary Clinton and the CIA and Covington and Burling and Booz Allen Hamilton and all of these figures that we've been talking about for the last couple years. Mike Pompeo got a copy of that report and buried it, did absolutely nothing. So any engagement, any communication with Mike Pompeo needs to be very clear. You have been part of a lot of this cover-up and a lot of these shenanigans overseas in foreign policy when you were a congressman, and now when you were at the CIA, you've continued to bolster those. You've continued the cover-up,
right.
And you're calling Russia and WikiLeaks and whistleblowers demons and enemies of the United States. I think he's going to implement that policy in the State Department, and we're going to have a very reckless, violent State Department with Mike Pompeo there, and then of course with the Gina Haspel replacing Mike Pompeo. She's also another war criminal that in fact has been threatened to be arrested in Europe. So we have this musical chair movement, but everybody is moving up, and I think it's going to be terrible for the foreign policy of the United States.
Okay, let's look at the domestic impact that this may have, Wilmer Leon. Obviously, just as somebody from Main Street in the U.S., looking at all the different firings, dismissals, resignations, at this point I've lost count. I have to do a count in order to put it in the sentence to you. But doesn't that affect negatively the way that Americans view what should be this administration that is in the White House that is supposed to run the country in a country that is already somewhat divided?
It depends on which Americans you ask. If you ask those who are doing any type of reading and have any ability to see through this utter reckless, feckless president, the answer would be people should be very, very frightened. What it won't really do is move the needle for those who are just blindly supporting the president and see him as an individual who can do no wrong. I think there's an awful lot of validity to what Scott laid out. This is really a president who tries to govern as a businessman. Everything that he does is as a one-off. There is no policy. There is no Weltanschauung. He demonstrates no worldview. He doesn't really understand the intricacies and the details of what's going on in Asia. And so firing his Secretary of State when we're so close to having a sit-down with the President of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, is just irresponsible. It is ridiculous. It makes absolutely no sense.
Well, we have to make some sense out of it, so let's give it a shot. Scott Bennett, CNBC says that, Mike Pompeo is probably bad news for Iran, but it's good news for North Korea. Another one saying this is going to hurt the Iran deal, but the North Korea talks, well, that's going to actually be a good thing for it. This one being from Bloomberg. Why is this? We know why it could be bad for Iran. We're going to get into that in a minute. But why is this good news for North Korea, which kind of goes against what Wilmer Leon, in a sense, said? But overall, the timing is what everybody agrees on, that it's just the wrong time for this to happen.
I don't think it's going to be bad news for North Korea, because everyone in the world, and the American people in particular, welcome the conversation with North Korea, welcome the opportunity to have a stable agreement to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, while at the same time understanding and accepting North Korea's very valid concern about regime change and concern of theirs to not suffer the same fate as Libya, as Syria, as Afghanistan, and as Iraq. And that is something that the Trump administration promised the American people they would not continue. They would not continue to do the regime change and forcing democracy down other nations' throats. So they've been waiting to see that happen. They've been very disappointed in regards to the JCPOA threats to abandon it and tear it up. They've been very disappointed in the reckless hostility towards Russia that is complete nonsense, is totally unneeded. And it demonstrates what Mr. Leon commented on, a misunderstanding of the world and misunderstanding of the United States' place in the world. So I think North Korea just needs to hold calm and hold by its cards and stick by a diplomacy of soft speaking and a open attitude towards, we do not want to wage war against South Korea. We're brothers. We're part of the same family. Split from 1953, the 38th parallel, we want to heal and reunite, but we will not be subjected to another regime change. And we do not trust the United States when it says it will promise or make an agreement or do some sort of a promise, because the United States promises and paper and signature is worthless, as we've seen in their threats against the JCPOA. So I think North Korea needs to stand by its guns. I think you'll see Mike Pompeo be very, very loud and boisterous and callous, and he'll be threatening, he'll be full of boasts, he'll be full of arrogance. That's just his nature. But at the same time, he needs to be directly confronted from people on the inside that can say with authority, Mr. Pompeo, when you were a congressman, you knew a lot about these operations, these illegal operations and terrorist financing that was going on, and you did absolutely nothing. That puts him on defensive, and everything he will do, he will recalculate according to, I really don't have a lot of political capital to be full of aggression and overconfidence, because if I do, My re-examination may occur, and I may be drawn up for investigation, as the FBI, Department of Justice, and these other parties have been with the generating of the fake Russian dossier. And that's why Britain is also very nervous. That's most probably why they tried to fake a chemical attack on the Russian spy. I think that was the United Kingdom intelligence services that did that. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot of shuffling and changing because of some of these events going around the world. And I think the same thing happens in Iran. They need to stand by their guns, be very calm, very lucid, very scholarly, and not react to any of the bluster and arrogance and sword rattling that Mike Pompeo will inevitably do. Now is the time for mature adults to sit quietly at the table and wait for the United States to respond in a quiet, respectful way, and not engage in conversation until they do. Let's never forget, the Europeans are in complete support of the JCPOA. They don't see problems with it. They don't see flaws with it. They've in fact told President Trump, you do not have the powers, the president, to tear this agreement up. This is our agreement as well.
Right.
And I think Trump is having to re-educate himself on the exact limitation of his powers. And if he doesn't, he is, again, as Tillerson right. said, going to be a moron that is destroying the reputation and the treasure of the United States to a point that there will be no country that embraces the United uh-huh. States except Israel. And even Israel will abandon the United States when it is done fighting its own wars using American soldiers.
Okay. Now, you talked about how Trump, and you used the word education there. And Wilmer Leon, I'd like to ask you, how does Trump get educated on different issues? And in particular, I'd like to hone in on foreign policy. Because if you want to take a look at the structure, Leon, and I hope you can follow what I'm trying to ask here, you have Trump as the president, obviously, then you have the VP, and I'm talking about the highest officials, highest ranking officials. Then you have the Secretary of State. Well, at this point, we have the new one, Pompeo. And then you have the US Defense Secretary. And of course, you have the Pentagon and the CIA. Who's leading Trump? Who educates Trump to make his decisions when it comes to different countries? Is it a combination of these, or is it the fact that Trump is looking to fit some kind of agenda that is being fed to him? Who is giving him direction to move forward?
Donald Trump. He doesn't listen to anybody. We have been given numerous reports that he doesn't pay attention during briefings. He doesn't read the briefing papers and documents that he's given. The primary reason why Rex Tillerson was fired was because Rex Tillerson pushed back against some of the things that Trump was trying to do, a la terminate the agreement with Iran. And Tillerson was trying to tell him that's not a good idea. Donald Trump can't be educated because he refuses to listen to people with more information and contrary positions. So if you don't tell him what he already perceives and believes to be correct. There's no space in the room, there's no air in the room for further dialogue. I want to be really clear on my position about North Korea. My point was not that it's going to be bad for Kim Jong-un. My point was that Donald Trump is not prepared to engage in diplomacy and dialogue so that we can have a positive outcome. He's going to walk in now backed by Mike Pompeo, thinking he's the biggest bully on the playground. My nuclear button is bigger than your nuclear button. That's an utterly ridiculous position to walk into a supposed negotiation and try and have. The first thing that he needs to do is to try to bring about an actual peace agreement ending the Korean conflict. And by ending the Korean conflict, he could then lay a predicate or a precedent for serious negotiation that would benefit both sides. Because to Scott's point, Kim Jong-un has already seen what happened in Iraq. Mm-hmm. He has seen what happened in Libya, and he doesn't want that to happen to him.
Okay, so Scott Bennett, I'm trying to figure out, based on the way that this whole thinking behind Trump and his process is, and also the intricacies behind his relationships with his key officials. It is said that on North Korea, when Mattis was asked questions about the talks, he said that, "I am out. Refer your questions to the White House." Tillerson was close to Mattis. Does this mean that Mattis and Trump are now not on the same page? Or is that an assumption that I'm making here?
I think Mattis is probably familiar with Trump's attitude, temperament, decision-making process, and he just is disengaged from the president and only will relate to military, tactical and strategic operations and placement of the United States forces. The State Department requires a very erudite, soft-spoken, very wise presence, a very charismatic presence. You have to have the human magnetism and charisma to engage in effective diplomacy and State Department craft. And Mattis has none of that, of course, and Tillerson did to a certain country bumpkinish way, but Mike Pompeo has absolutely no charisma, no honesty, no character. He's called Julian Assange and WikiLeaks demons, and I think every American is disgusted by that because every American supports WikiLeaks in as far as it reveals criminal, unconstitutional behavior by the government that is supposed to be ruled by the people, and instead we're finding the people are ruled over by a tyranny of the NSA, CIA, military police state. And I saw that up close and personal when I worked at the State Department. I worked in the counterterrorism realm. I was the liaison officer to Special Operations Command, and I reported terrorist financing that Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, was engaged in with Saudi Arabia. And I reported it to Mike Pompeo, among many other congressmen and senators, and the White House and Donald Trump on December 19th of 2017. And no one has done anything, but all of that is coming to a head in the legal process. Uh-huh. So I think James Mattis is probably slowly inching his way out of the Secretary of Defense role, and who will replace him? Well, that's another question. And right. It seems to be war hawks. Trump is seemingly being led down a path of choosing war hawks and bluster and arrogant bullies, as Mr. Leon accurately described, and the world just will not tolerate bullies. They'll turn away from them, and the U.S. can very right. soon find itself in a stalemate of diplomacy and military operations.
Okay.
Because the military engagement
That's
in Syria and North Korea is at an end. Okay. Syria has won with the help of Russia and Iran, And I think North Korea recognizes the American people do not want to invest military resources because China would come to the rescue.
Yeah, let's talk about China.
And most likely Russia would too.
Yeah, because we have to talk about China, Russia, and we also have to talk about Iran a little bit in a matter of 2 minutes. So Rima Leon, take your pick. I think China, it was interesting that Tillerson said, you know what, we have to, he used the word conflict, try to prevent conflict with China in his address as outgoing Secretary of State. Is that the way then the U.S. views, and how do you think that now with this new Secretary of State, they're going to be engaged with China?
No, I think Scott, and this is something that we don't hear enough analysts right now talking about, I think the selection of Pompeo validates the idea that we are now moving closer to a war footing than a peace footing. We are looking at bullies, and we are in a position where they want to shoot first and aim later. They are smoking at the gas station. This is a very, very, very dangerous, dangerous group of individuals that are now coming together in the White House who figure it's better to war than it is to peace.
The question to you here, Scott Bennett, in a matter of the few minutes that we had Tillerson on when he was explaining his resignation or explaining the fact that he's departing, he three times mentioned how with the help of allies, we can't achieve, and he talked about Iran and North Korea and Russia and China. Is that a message to Donald Trump?
I think it is. It has a remnants of the Dwight D. Eisenhower farewell address when he said, beware the military-industrial complex. I think Tillerson has said that in a certain extent. And he's exactly right, and every American knows that, and I think the world knows that too. Beware the military-industrial complex, which are all of the defense contractors who have turned war into a money-making operation. Smedley Butler talked about that as well. And beware the secretaries of state and the CIA, because they are the fertilizers of war. They are the cultivators of conflict, and they are the operators that sow the seeds of violence, which the American people have to consume the bitter fruit of with the sacrifice of their sons and daughters. So I think Mr. Leon's right. We seem to be moving towards a war footing. Tillerson's ominous warning to President Trump that we need our allies in the world to do anything on a foreign policy level is very accurate, because the world is done with unilateralism. It's done with the world of the United States with the retard George W. Bush running roughshod over nations for 18 years and trying to take down seven nations in 5 years. That was their original plan. The world's done with it. The world is sickened, especially Europe with all of the mass refugees from Libya and Syria and elsewhere. All of that was caused by the United States foreign policy.
Sorry, I got to jump in. I do apologize. Unfortunately, we're just out of time. I'd like to thank Colin Campbell, a correspondent, joining us in the beginning of the program. Rima Leon from Washington, D.C. Thank you, political scientist and also political commentator Scott Bennett. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Taiwan and the entire team in the capital of Taiwan, it's goodbye.